Welcome to the Marketing Society podcast. I'm your host, Mike Piggott. For today's discussion, it's the third in the series that we're running with Kantar. With the first one, we looked at innovation and the second one, communication. And for today's chat, we're going to be talking about purpose, building brands with purpose. To join me, I've got the head of brand domain consultant team at Insights Division at Kantar, Adele Jolliffe. Welcome, Adele.
Good morning.
Hello, hello. So I'm sounding a bit kind of husky and whatever at the moment. So I've got a bit under the weather. So hopefully everyone can understand me as we get into this. But so I'm sounding a little bit gravelly, just to put that out there at the start. But yeah, so to carry on this sort of series we're doing, as per the format of these, we're kind of basing each one on articles that you guys have done for the Society website. So I just want to get really straight into what we're talking about with purpose here. So my first question really is, to what extent do you think marketers see purpose as a nice to have rather than a need to have these days?
I think to a large extent, it depends on their interpretation of the term. And that is, I would say, at the heart of some quite furious debate at the moment. So purpose can be quite easily misconstrued. And in my view, it can be believed to be quite fluffy or meaningless if you take quite a narrow view of it. But if you think about the meaning of the word purpose, which is the reason for which something exists, it's actually a really incredibly important and really valuable question to ask about your brand. Why does it exist? What does it do for people? How does it make people's lives better? And that can be in big ways or it can be in small ways, but for either of those, ideally, it's quite connected to the products and services you provide. And perhaps on top of that, through some other actions you might take, like the way you do business or how you represent ideas or people in your advertising. But what we know from our Brands E database is that brands that have a strong reputation for having a brand purpose, those that are known for making people's lives better, they tend to have higher equity and higher value. And when you think about purpose in those terms of being a really fundamental understanding of why your brand exists, that does kind of make more sense. And so with that in mind, we consider purpose to be quite distinct from something like, say, sustainability or corporate social responsibility. The two are often and probably should be related, but they're not one and the same thing. And sometimes they become interchangeable in the language that people use around the topic. And I think a bit more clarification around that would really help, because there's a kind of bipartisan debate at the moment about whether purpose works or not. We've seen it in the past couple of weeks. Peter Field's session at the FWorks conference has been kind of blown out of all proportion, that, you know, Peter Field officially says purpose works. And then you've got the kind of critics of it saying, no, it's a load of rubbish. And Peter Field's actually saying, I'm not saying it works or it doesn't work. I'm saying there are themes and things to learn when it's successful that tell you something about what really great effective purpose looks like. It's not a question of whether it works or it doesn't. So I think, is it a nice to have? Is it a need to have? It's important, but if you don't get it right, it's not going to help you fundamentally.
I mean, knowing, like, if purpose is having a reason to exist and knowing why you exist, I kind of feel that if we're going by that definition, then it does feel kind of fundamental, because it's like, humans need a reason to exist generally. Like, you kind of need a reason to do a thing most of the time. If you're just doing a thing that's aimless, you don't have purpose, right? So, I mean, it's getting a bit philosophical here, but you don't have an end goal. You don't have a thing to be aiming for or a reason to be.
Exactly. And I think maybe where sometimes we get into problems from a brand perspective, I think you're absolutely right in terms of people, and all sorts of brilliant stuff around how having a sense of purpose in life is the secret to happiness and all that kind of thing. When it comes to brands, one of the slight problems is that the purpose may be a bit more commercially driven. So the purpose is to sell stuff, to make profit, to increase the value of my business for shareholders. And that is, again, it's important, but it's not a rich territory to start thinking about then how you connect your products and services with human beings in a way that makes them relevant and helpful in their lives. And ultimately, that will be the secret to your commercial success. But some organizations can feel, well, my purpose is to make profit. And it's really thinking beyond that about the role you play in people's lives and understanding that. Yeah.
I guess I was thinking about it from the point of view of how you keep your team and your workforce, et cetera, kind of motivated. Like if they, isn't it that whole Richard Branson thing of basically like the more you look after your like company and your workers, essentially, then they sort of, they will make you successful. They will come up with ideas and ways to connect to consumers and things. So yeah. I'm sort of coming at it from that point of view.
Yeah, totally. And I think if your employees understand, and I don't mean to be too grand about this, but the higher purpose of why the company exists, not only is that motivating for them and rewarding for them because they have a sense of why they're turning up every day and why they're committing and why they're dedicated to what they're doing, but also it allows that purpose to kind of live in the everyday decision-making of each of those individuals. And that's critical to it being a success. So it can't just sit as a, you know, a series of words emblazoned on the wall of the boardroom. It's got to live and breathe. And that's said often, but not necessarily any sort of practical ways about how to do that. There was a fantastic session at the Festival of Marketing last week with the CMO and I think the CEO of KFC, lots of three-letter acronyms there. But one of the things that was really brilliant about that was they talked very passionately about the role of a clear, simple purpose in enabling certainly the CMO, whose remit is marketing, to have engagement and influence over other parts of the business that were critical to the success of the overall strategy working. So they didn't call it purpose, but it's a similar kind of idea. They talked about the kind of essence of their brand, what their brand was all about, being the nation's favorite chicken brand. So what they understood about that was that whilst it's fried chicken in a bucket, it actually represents a moment of joy, of indulgence, of maybe treat, reward, that kind of, you know, we're getting a KFC kids, you know, that kind of moment. They really understood the role they were playing beyond the functionality of the product they were selling. And they gave themselves some sort of intervention questions that would help at certain parts, decision-making moments in the business to keep them on track. So they had questions like, is what I'm contemplating doing, well, is it on strategy? Fine. But the second question was, is it undeniably KFC? And I thought that was a really nice practical way of saying, and the CEO actually said, you know, this isn't just about marketing decisions. This might be a decision about a recruiting policy or something completely disconnected from marketing. But the person in charge of that would ask themselves, is this undeniably KFC? And it's just a brilliant way of really making your purpose a success, which is it's not disconnected. It's authentic to you. It feels right for your brand. It's simple. And it is present in the minds of everybody who's making decisions in connection with it. And sometimes that's where it falls down. It sits in the remit just of marketing, or it feels a bit distant and disconnected from the everyday business of the rest of the organization. And that's a clear learning now of one of the reasons that purpose might not be very effective if it's not kind of felt and resonating through the whole business.
Yeah, it kind of it makes me think. I said this on the last couple of Kantar podcasts that we've done, where it often makes me think of you know, storytelling and filmmaking, and you know, your hero having a clear goal. If you make it too complicated or convoluted, or there's multiple goals and the audience don't quite understand it, if there's a clear thing right at the end that's set up right at the start. And you might have lots of weird, you know, pitfalls and things that happen along the way, but ultimately that's still your North Star of where you're heading. People can respond to that whether they're inside the business or whether they're customers. It just seems like that the simplicity of getting a really clean purpose that seems to kind of, you know, fit with your business. You know, that seems to be the sweet spot.
It's a lovely way to think about it, the idea of your purpose as your story, your brand story, or your brand being the protagonist in a story that has a past and a future.
We're all the heroes of our own story, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it reminds me of the idea of purpose may be contested, but let's just say it's a pretty good fundamental thing to think about if you are a brand owner. A good way of figuring out what your purpose might be or how you might articulate it is actually to think about your brand story. So why did somebody put their livelihood, reputation on the line to start a business, to do something? What were they trying to do for people? What problem were they trying to solve? What were they trying to add to people's lives that they took this risk to start this company and do this thing? And not all brands can do this, because some are brands that are made under different circumstances, part of bigger organizations. But if you can go back and look at the history and the story from the beginning, why did someone begin this company and start out on this venture? And then I love what you're saying there, that actually that brings you up to today. And then you can start to take from that, right? Okay, well, where does this story go next? And as a protagonist, you know what, in the article, we talk about tension mining, which is really the idea of looking at what's going on in society and in culture and in the wider world and saying, okay, how could the world be? How is it today? What's the gap between those two things? And where could my brand be part of resolving that? So a good example of that is the Always Like a Girl campaign. So for me, that sits beautifully between the potential of girls to achieve anything they want to achieve, but today's limitations that are put upon them from the sort of societal and cultural expectations of gender. Mm. And Always is products and services really facilitate to some extent the meeting point between those, that gap, because what they're able to do is to give people who are having a period confidence that they're not going to be limited by the sort of physical outcome of that thing, or how they feel, you know, whatever that might be, how they feel and how that could hold them back. Mm. So it's a link to the products and services, but it's elevated to the bigger story of how those products and services in a small way speak to a bigger issue that's going on in the world. So you can start to say, well, why did someone start this company? Or what? How do we relate to bigger things that are going on in the world, but keeping it grounded in what you do, the role you play in people's lives, and not having that as too siloed, too separate from the rest of the business, which I think is sometimes what we see with organizations. Purpose becomes a thing they feel they have to do. Mm. The groundswell of momentum that you should be doing something, but it can be looked at in a bit of a vacuum from the rest of the organization, as if it's kind of separate to the whole idea of building brand preference and selling. And that's kind of the point of the article, to say that really, if you think of the two as completely interlinked, purpose is not necessarily so groundbreakingly new and different in how you should think about tackling it, because it speaks to the very basic fundamentals of brand building. It's really part of the same craft.
Yeah, I mean, well, I just want to touch on that really, because you did in the article, you did talk about how that there can be that sort of danger of purpose sort of fundamentally or derailing the fundamentals of brand building. Is that the case, sort of it being separate to the business, or people going off on a tangent and not being connected to anything else, or how does it work?
Yeah, I think there's a few different possible risks in there. I think one is taking too narrow a view of it, as we talked about at the beginning. So just equating purpose with sustainability is a bit risky, because you end up down a funny track if you do that. Definitely seeing it as a kind of entirely separate vertical can be problematic for the reasons we've just discussed, because then it's not really cohesive. It's not really helping the overall cumulative gist of your brand, which is really all that exists of it, right? The memories and feelings that people have within their mental network that they associate with your brand. The other possible risk is that you kind of go to the other end of the extreme and you consider it to be the only thing you should be worrying about, the only thing that matters. And that you can be forgiven for this, because there's an awful lot of evidence to suggest that, you know, people will entirely reject brands that don't align with their value system and so on. But there was a fantastic article by Steve Harrison around his book, where he wrote an article called Why Adland Should Stop Trying to Save the World and Start Selling, which was promoting his book. What he talked about was, people will, of course, tell you that they will reject brands who have got questionable supply chains or don't pay tax or whatever. And then literally in the next breath, they will pull out an Apple device and place an order with Amazon. And there's this sort of contradiction hiding in plain sight, which doesn't always make its way into the debates around this topic, but is very important to it. We did some analysis here at Kantar using the Brands E database. So we looked at all the different kind of brand associations people have in their heads about thousands of brands across hundreds of sectors. And we tried to figure out what role, particularly the angle of kind of corporate social responsibility, plays in building brand preference. And we found that across all of those categories and brands on average, it explains about 10% of brand preference. Now, that's quite important, because it means it does matter. 10% is not insignificant, but it's not everything. And if it's 10% on average, then you don't want to make too many assumptions about what it is for your brand and your sector, because that will differ quite a lot as well. So I think people can either go too sidelined on it, too all in on it or think about it in too narrow a way and not be kind of liberated by the idea that purpose is really about understanding what your brand does for people. So yeah, there's a few little potholes maybe to avoid as you go down the path of purpose.
Mm. Do you think it's there's that sort of element of making people's lives easier, which can sometimes trump a purpose in regards? I think you talk about the value action gap in your article, which I guess you kind of touched on already. Is there always going to be a gap? Like, is it that people are always going to sort of say, well, you know, up to a point, my values are incredibly important, but like I'm in a spot, I'm stranded. This is the only shop for miles. I have to buy this thing. I know they're a terrible company. So practicality sometimes weighs out.
Definitely. I mean, it's really about making it as easy as possible for people to close that gap. So one of my favorite examples of this happened during 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic. So people in general would like to use less plastic. People are very aware of the problems with plastic, particularly single-use plastic. And they, let's say that might be something they feel they should do. It's a positive intention that they have. At the start of the pandemic, there was a 10% increase in the number of people buying plastic-wrapped bananas. Okay. So the kind of context of the pandemic and the motivation to stay safe, to kind of protect yourself from germs. And remember, at that point, we didn't quite know the surface-driven transmission of the virus. People knew full well that buying plastic, single-use plastic, I mean, these things are already wrapped in a casing of skin, right, that you don't ingest, but still, loads more people went out and bought plastic-wrapped bananas. And you can almost imagine the sort of mental journey there, which is the default pattern behavior is to buy bananas not in plastic for all those good reasons. But the sort of context and the motivation, exactly as you're saying, kind of disrupts the thinking. People re-judge their priorities and they kind of reach for the plastic wrapped. Now, the secret here is innovation. So what brands should really be looking to do, and I think you've spoken to Dr. Nikki Morley on one of these podcasts, who is very passionate about the concept of sustainability by design. Mm-hmm. She talks about this idea that the value action gap, the way of making these two things connect, is to make it really easy for people to resolve that contradiction. So innovate in ways that mean people don't have to make that choice between their values and the convenience and the ease and the things that will dominate those decisions, which you're exactly right in pointing those out. Find ways that you can make it dead easy for people to align their values and their actions. And that's really how brands will be the driving force of a sustainable future. It won't be through making ads, just telling people we're all in this together. You know, it will be tangibly offering ways that people can do this in a way that means there isn't the compromise for them.
Mm, yeah, I find it online where, you know, if I'm getting, like, I don't know, some like sustainable like cloths or whatever for the house, so you can rewash them or whatever, so you're not throwing away sponges and things like that. And oftentimes, nearly all of the comments online of people buying them will be to do with often the price point or the quality of it. So they're like, well, it's as decent as a normal sponge and it's not five times the price. Because as soon as you price people out, then they're like, well, you know, only the really, really well-meaning people are going to be buying those things. But that's hard, you know, like I think when you're trying to chip away in a market, especially trying to chip away at the big companies out there, they're established that are, you know, cheap as chips for certain products. And I don't know. So sometimes there's an element of, you know, like you say, the companies and the brands leading the way and people having to, make a bit of a sacrifice. I know we're sort of mainly talking about sustainability at this point, but it does tend to come up, I think.
It does connect. And in fact, what you choose to focus on, so where you might focus your efforts in terms of making this, bridging this gap easier for people, should be inspired by your purpose. Mm. It should connect, ideally. Purpose then becomes a good way of helping you make decisions about what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And then your sustainability behavior is also authentic to you, which is quite important as well. So yeah, they're not one and the same thing, but they definitely connect.
Mm. There's one of the points in the article where you were talking about exploring, being meaningfully different and exploring cultural tensions. Mm-hmm. I think we've sort of already touched on this a little bit. But I wanted to, because we had an article about this once on the Society site. It was about how it's pretty easy for marketers to market sexy products. And, but you know, I mean, everyone kind of knows what I mean, like, hopefully, but, you know, products that are exciting and flashy and whatever, everybody wants them, everybody wants that particular brand. But it's much harder. The writer was saying, arguing at the time, to be a marketer that can you know, promote something really boring and mundane. and I wanted to put that question to you with purpose. Like, how do you find a purpose that's going to get people fired up for some really boring product? I think in my notes I was saying gardening equipment, but actually you can probably make gardening equipment quite exciting. But
yeah, I mean, it depends how into gardening you are. It's a great question. I mean, I guess what we're really asking there is a fantastic purpose only the preserve of a certain type of brand or type of company? I mean, we have a measure of brand purpose in the Brand Z database. And what we ask people, so people are looking at brands in a category context, and they're asked which brands they think make people's lives better, either through their products and services, their advertising, or the way they do business. So we're quite overt about the fact that this is to do with kind of going beyond making profit. It's about, you know, making lives better in a slightly broader sense. Now, a brand like, you won't be too surprised to hear, a brand like Pampers, right? It scores really high on that. And no surprise, really. Pampers are one of my favorite ever examples of having a great purpose. They really understood that their products were integral in childhood development because they help children sleep better because they're not irritated and uncomfortable overnight. And they help them play better during the day because they've got the freedom to move. And there was also engineering into the structure of the nappies to help children do that. So it's a fantastic example of a product understanding its wider role in people's lives and how it makes lives better. And they score very high on this. But another company, one of the highest scoring companies on purpose in the Brand Z database, is Amazon. And Amazon's not necessarily the sexiest thing in the world. It's an online retailer, right? But it's seen to make people's lives better in a way that's actually recognized. So if you unpack that a bit and you explore how they've sort of told this story in some of their communications, I think about the priest and the imam ad, where the two religious leaders kind of, they visit each other for a cup of tea or something in the afternoon, and they both signal to the other that their knees hurt from kind of being up and down, you know, so praying and things during the day. And each of them have the same idea to buy a gift of knee pads for the other. And they use Amazon One Click. Fantastic shot of them using Amazon One Click. And literally in 24 hours, they receive the same present from each other. It's a beautiful moment of shared connectivity between them, despite their different beliefs and all that kind of stuff. The point of that is it shows you that Amazon has allowed us to have pretty much anything you could think of at your fingertips with virtually no hassle and very little time. Now, that's not necessarily the sexiest proposition, but they have this kind of relentless focus on what's possible when it comes to range, speed, convenience, price, all of those things. And in that sense, they're kind of taking on their own fight about how the world could be versus how it is today. So if I'm a gardening equipment brand, I need to really understand the role my products play from a functional perspective, but also more elevated than that. What does that mean emotionally? What does that do in people's lives beyond the function of helping them keep their garden pretty and trim or whatever? And they need to really understand their brand as well, because it's critical. This is often missed by brand owners thinking about purpose. They've really got to understand what's already expected of their brand and explore how their brand resonates emotively. So what are the codes that it uses? How does it kind of show up in the world? And therefore, what feels right to come from that brand in terms of tone of voice, of purpose as well? And if you understand that, I don't care if you're a gardening product or you're the sexiest thing in the world, you can really get a sense of what your products and services mean to people and the role they play in lives. So I think, yeah, it's not that purpose is just for some brands or not others. It's not wholly effective or ineffective. It's about the strategy behind it. It's about how you do it and how much of the rigor of the understanding of your brand you bring to it. And then I think it's a really powerful tool.
Yeah, I suppose with the when you were talking about the kind of emotion as well, I think that's, again, that's a thing in the article where you talk about a tapestry of impressions, like sort of leading to that decision moment. So, you know, using both your system one and your system two. And I kind of find that interesting. Like, I guess then marketers, not only do they have to be thinking about purpose, I guess, but sort of purpose, emotional purpose, and then rational purpose, I suppose, is my sort of basic way of looking at it. And how does that blend? How do they get that blend right, you know, between the emotional and the rational when it comes to purpose?
Yeah. And they're more connected than you might think. They're more sort of, I mean, they're often thought of as quite separate entities. And I hear clients say, you know, we have rational benefits, but we need to build emotion. And actually, those two things are often very strongly interlinked. Because
are they not both happening at the same time? That was the dispelling the myth of, like you say, one was happening and then the other was happening, whereas actually what is more happening is both almost kind of at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you blink and you miss it, definitely. Mm. But the work, the sort of academic work that's gone into this, is able to deconstruct that a little bit. So let's rewind then. So we're talking here about sort of system one processing and system two processing. So system one processing being when the brain's using that, it's being very intuitive. It's using emotion. It's using a sort of pattern matching, past experience, to make a decision very quickly. When it's using system two processing, it's being more tempered, more controlled, more evaluative. The problem with that is it's very expensive in energy terms. So whenever it can, the brain's trying to rely on system one to make quick decisions. Now, there was some interpretation of this that suggested that some decisions were entirely system one based and some were entirely system two based, and that often brand related decisions fell into the system one bucket. Actually, though, the latest learning is helping us understand that both of those take place just to varying degrees. And it does make sense, because if everything was system one, you'd get to the checkout at the supermarket and have a shock when you see what's in your trolley, because you'd been putting it all in unconsciously, right? The point is, you make the default gut decision is there, often based on previous behavior, default behavior, but you do kind of go, yes, that's the one I'm putting in my trolley. You know, you don't do it completely unconsciously. So it does make sense that it's there. But what we know is that how much that sort of system two, more conscious confirmation comes in, will depend on how strong that system one default response is. Mm. So if you go back to the bananas earlier, you can sort of overlay that quite easily. So the system one response to the bananas would be, I always buy unwrapped bananas every week. I'm reaching for the bananas. System two kicks in because the motivation here is different about safety and the context is different. I'm in the middle of a global pandemic. So that makes the system one response less strong in terms of how confident I feel about making that decision and that outcome being the right one for me. And that's where the emotion is, that gut feeling, the feeling of rightness is what the academics call it. And then system two says, hang on a minute, rethink here. And you can see the hand kind of reaching for the plastic wrapped bananas instead, because it's disrupted that default behavior. Now, when we think about purpose in this sense, and it being one of those kind of set of the tapestry of impressions within your mind, what you're wanting is the brand to have a sort of advantage at both of those types of ways of processing. So the brand needs to feel right when the system one processing is working. And so that purpose needs to be aligned with all of the other things that people think about your brand. So you've got real clarity, because that really is a benefit in terms of system one, because the brain accessing something quickly is what's happening there. So real clarity of what you're all about will help you with system one. And then for system two to kind of evaluate and make sure it doesn't divert from that system one response, you need those kind of richer, deeper associations to be evaluated and make sure that brand is kind of insulated from being disrupted in terms of that choice. So purpose needs to be aligned with everything else that you're doing. It's got to fit seamlessly within that tapestry, because all we're really talking about here is a lifetime of exposures, of encounters with brands, creating a gist, a sense of what a brand is in your head. And then in that moment when it really counts, what your brain can grasp hold of in terms of its best guess of an emotional response to what's going to be the best decision for you, and evaluating that to confirm that that's the right one. So any kind of extra thinking you need to do, where purpose is something separate or another thing that you're meant to be thinking about to sort of come into your evaluation, it's going to create friction. And it's going to make your potential buyer think. And that's really the worst thing you can do. You want to be the obvious choice, the intuitive choice. You don't really want to make them think too much. And so this idea of authenticity, alignment, consistency, cohesion, purpose, having that link to your products and services, is all part of it being a fundamental brand building tool and not a separate thing that you need to kind of do in another universe, because it just won't stick with all the other stuff in the memory networks about your brand.
Yeah, it's while you're talking, it made me think of the car adverts that you see in cinemas being a really good example, because often they'll have, you know, the emotion, somebody out driving, often in the Scottish Highlands or somewhere like that, you know, and it's kind of freedom and expression and all this stuff. But then sometimes they'll zoom through the car and kind of show you doing some technical things, just to show you some of the rational technical stuff. And then near the end, there'll be some kind of tagline or message that's, sort of semi-linked to their purpose of, freedom and exploration and, with precision engineering or something like that. So it's kind of, it's almost like melding the whole thing through it with a bit of a story, trying to keep the emotions up with the rational at the same time. I find those adverts so interesting in a way. But
there's a couple of interesting things you said there. One is that we did a lot of work a few years ago, which really challenged this idea of let's call it message versus impression. Because what you're really talking about there is that piece of content is leaving a kind of sort of specter of a feeling within the minds of a person. It's not leaving, here's a message that we have this feature or this thing, it's just leaving that, it's adding to that gist of whether that's about excitement or status or whatever it might be that car is trying to signal for you. So this idea of impression versus message is a much, I think, healthier and more creative way of thinking about what your advertising is doing. But the other interesting thing about what you just said there is I might say in response and stick which badge on it, because one of the problems that...
Oh yeah, they're quite samey. I didn't want to start like just raining on the cars, but that, I suppose that's why when I said they're interesting, I do find that there isn't much to differentiate them because they're all kind of trying to do the same thing these days.
And this is why brand centricity is critical. So purpose linking to your products and services, yes, but purpose that is unmistakably, distinctively you and can be done in unmistakably your way, whatever that might be. So you take a brand like Nike or something, which emotively can be decoded as very bold, very daring, very provocative, very polemic, Then take a brand like Audi, which can be decoded emotively as very sort of discerning, very sort of intelligent, that kind of thing. If you were thinking about how they might tackle purpose or an innovation, or even think about what their customer experience might look like, if you look at the brands in that way and you can understand them in that way, you start to see very quickly that they should do things very differently from each other. Mm. And the problem is that everyone says, oh yeah, our purpose is freedom, optimism, bold, inclusive, and then they add all the content to deliver that impression is sort of made with just those concepts in mind. It's missing what is authentic for that particular brand and what people expect from that brand. And that's often an ingredient that gets a bit overlooked. And you end up then with, there's a fantastic YouTube reel just as COVID was kind of at its, I suppose, its height of lockdown. And all these brands went on air with these ads, which all did the same thing. They started with like a slow piano track. They showed the world is changing. They showed maybe a medical professional with a face mask on, And it was like, we're all in this together and we'll get through it. And there's a fantastic YouTube reel just shoving together all these generic pieces of content. And that's the world you're in if you don't really understand what your brand's role is. And that's kind of what Peter Field was saying, right? That some of these campaigns are really brilliant. Some of them are total wallpaper. And there are real tangible differences between those that we can learn. So yeah, this is why I get a bit frustrated when people sort of say, oh, purpose is rubbish or purpose is great, because it's like saying advertising works or it doesn't. There's so much to understand about what creates the difference between those two conclusions. It's just a silly thing to say that it's wholly good or bad.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense, actually. And it reminded me of you, when you were saying the words, so just sort of throwing out buzzwords, it reminds me a little bit of, you see the there's three words that Netflix have on the bottom of their programs to kind of identify what they are. It's like bold, exciting, thrilling, or whatever. And I always find those words interesting if you've seen the show, because you can be like, oh man, that was clearly some tired person was having to assign that one in particular because they got it really wrong. I do kind of wonder that when it's just like brands are sitting around and like, what defines us? And then they're like, hold on, roll out the tired Netflix person, and he or she can give you those three words.
Yeah, so totally. You get it right. It also makes me wonder what in their algorithm they hold about me. The programs with those three words they're suggesting for me.
Yeah, well, this is it. So if you end up watching a show that's out of your wheelhouse, and then you'll start getting upserved, like, I don't know, like loads of rom-coms or whatever, and you're like, oh, okay, these are all for like 16-year-old teenagers. Well, yeah. Damn it. So
yeah, I know.
Ruined your own algorithm. I guess we're totally running out of time. I just realized. But there's always so much to unpack with this kind of topic, especially these days. But I guess I need to just round up. So I just want to, I suppose, have a kind of a final question, really. Like, basically around, you know, is purpose kind of, should purpose be pretty much near the top of the list of things that a marketer is focusing on, you know, in the next 12 months ahead? And if it's not, why not?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to say yes, but I'm going to qualify why I'm saying yes. Okay. So I mean, yes, if we think about purpose in terms of knowing why your brand exists and how it makes their lives better. So that broader definition. And if anyone listening to this who's a marketer is drawing a bit of a blank when they ask themselves that question, chances are they've got something that's missing that's going to really help them strategically plan much better. And that's not just my view. I mean, you know, Mark Ritson bangs on and on about this, that he doesn't necessarily, he's happy if you want to call it purpose, but the way he thinks about it is just basically kind of showing how your brand is relevant to the people you're trying to target. I mean, I think if I were giving brand owners some advice about this, I would say, brand purpose definitely does matter because it can be so successful in kind of steering decisions outside of marketing's remit, which you kind of need to do to be very successful. It's a very good way of kind of creating focus. So it really does matter. But don't confuse purpose with sustainability because you'll go down too narrow a path and you then are really at risk of feeling very disconnected from the rest of what you're saying about your brand. And ultimately, the point of the article, which is remember that your brand's ability to predispose people to buy it is as a result of all of the associations they have for you in their memories. Those associations make you easy to choose. That's one of the critical ingredients of creating brand value. So a brand-centric, relevant purpose will ultimately help you win in that sort of battleground of the mind. That's why purpose is so intrinsically connected to the fundamentals of brand building. And that's really the most important thing not to forget.
Sounds an amazing place on which to end. Thank you so much, Adele, for all the wisdom. We've packed quite a lot in there. We'll put some links in the show notes to various things and bits and bobs and stuff that you guys are up to. But for now, thank you so much for coming on the Marketing Society podcast.
Thanks for having me.